Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show with me, Tim Fuel, back, yes, back with our weekly look at Non-League Football. I'm alone in the studio today, but Dave will be back hopefully next week. He's enjoying semi-retirement for sure. It's been a while, partly by choice, partly by design. As you will know, I've been involved behind the scenes with my club, Hazen Yedding United, for, well, nearly 25 years now. At step three in the Southern Premier South, we are one of the lucky ones, allow fans to our games. Lucky because that's why we are involved with our clubs, for days when there are short queues at the turnstiles and a buzz inside the ground. But, as my lack of time for the show has exemplified, it's very hard. For the already diminished numbers of overworked volunteers, it's stressful. Lots of red tape, for all the right reasons, of course. Lots of additional measures, with effectively people putting in even more hours for free at clubs up and down the country, so we can enjoy the game we all love. So, well, we'll ask just one thing of you as I return back with a Non-League Football Show. Please share the message widely. Let's educate. Let's inform. This is by the fans, for the fans. So if you find yourself getting agitated this weekend whilst waiting in line to scan your QR code to get into a ground, or maybe you're in a line for a temperature check, or maybe an even slower turnstile than usual. If you are annoyed that due to the new hospitality rules and regulations, you can't get a pre-match beer or be allowed to stand in your usual group of 10 because of the rule of six and the Northeast Terrace isn't quite what it used to be. If you think wearing a mask to use the toilets is an affront to your civil liberties and the pushing of hand sanitizer uses is just far too much for you to bear, please don't take it out on the people running the club. They are as upset about it as you, but they have probably already given many hours of their week for free just to enable that club to open the turnstiles, to get that game on, to get fans back watching football. Somebody spent hours writing a risk assessment, reassessing it at every change in direction from the government, the local authorities, football bodies, that people are making changes so we can still watch football. Somebody has sanitised those toilets, those handrails, every touch point after every training session, after every game. Somebody has spent time organising and putting up those signs that now decorate grounds up and down the country. Almost all of them are doing it for nothing. Doing it for their club. Doing it for football. Doing it because, whatever their role, whatever their title, they are first and foremost fans of the beautiful game. Necessity is being carried out to allow us to play football, to watch football. Being implemented by the fans, for the fans. Please show them your patience and give them a thank you too. Even with fans, the lack of other revenue streams means that most clubs are running at a loss. Even now, clubs are still run by the fans, for the fans. Apologies for the sermon, but it is important for football. Now let's get the show underway. So whilst we've been away, there's been so much going on, and some diehards have been continuing in the face of everything thrown at them. So it's only fair that valour, that commitment, that grit, that determination to serve the non-league fan is rewarded by a bump up the show schedule. Yes, sir, we're going to start off this week's show with a trip to the non-league paper towers and a welcome back to the non-league football show to David Richardson, senior writer at the non-league paper. Hello, David.
Hi, Tim. How are you? Good to be back on.
Well, it's good to have you back on, but obviously you guys haven't stopped. You've been going throughout the summer, and it's been well received by everybody as well.
Yeah, it's been business as usual for us, really, throughout the summer. Like you say, it's obviously been a bit challenging with the lack of games and everything that's been going on as well. We haven't been in the office at all, really, for about 7 months. So that's been a challenge in itself. But no, it's been, I think, at the same time, a pretty rewarding 7 months, you know, still, you know, keeping the non-league news train going and keeping non-league sort of in the public eye to a certain extent. So, yeah, it's been a long sort of summer, but good to have football back up and running now.
Well, it is back up and running across the board, really. And let's start with the National League. There was a bit of a standoff between clubs and the government due to the lack of fans ahead of that opening weekend. But £10 million pledged over the first 3 months of the season in aid across the 67 clubs, which was enough to get things underway. But as far as I'm aware, there's still no indicator as to how that's going to be shared or when that's going to be paid out. I think clubs are just desperate to get some football played.
Yeah, that's right. Obviously, I think at the moment, discussions are still ongoing as to how the money will be split up, as you say, over the first 3 months of the season. You know, it all seems to come together pretty late in the day before the season started last weekend. But, you know, nonetheless, I think clubs were grateful to finally be able to start their season as planned on October 3rd. But yeah, it remains to be seen quite to what extent that money should be paid out and how. It's obviously been spoken about doing it on gate and average attendances. You know, I think that's the sort of main idea at the moment that's being discussed. Obviously, it's worth remembering that as it's the government's money, they have a big say in how it should be spent effectively and how it's divided up, as you would expect. So, yeah, it's not completely sort of in the National League's hands as such. Obviously, they can advise and guide and sort of campaign for their clubs as to what would be best for them, in their opinion. But ultimately, yeah, a lot of the power is with the government. But it does seem like the main idea is to do it on average attendances, which, you know, in my opinion, I think it's a sensible way to go about it. There had been, you know, some clubs saying that the amount should be equal across the board. But personally, I think if you do it with average attendances, it's a pretty simple way and straightforward way to do it. Of course, there'll always be some grievances with that method. I think you could say that, you know, for the promoted clubs coming up to step one this season, Wealdstone, Altrincham, King's Lynn and Weymouth, you know, I think they could have expected higher crowds this year. So, you know, they'll be saying, well, we're basing it on National League North and South crowds, which I guess is a fair point. But I think if you go beyond that and, you know, and start taking into account sort of lost sponsorships and things like that, it becomes very complicated. And then, you know, Michael Tattersall and the National League will sort of have 67 clubs bang on the door, really, for their own needs and wants. So I think, yeah, the most straightforward way is to do it on average attendances. You know, you've got the number there, and you know, the clubs can work out sort of how much money they would have had in from that gate revenue. So still, as we always seem to say, sorting out to be done. But certainly positive news that the National League has been backed by the government. And obviously, initially, that finances for the first 3 months, but and then it will be reviewed going forwards. That's sort of just the way that the government operates, basically, on a sort of 3 month basis, and then they review it and see where to go next. But as I understand it, the National League has the government's backing beyond then, and should they still need that financial support after the 3 months, then it will be forthcoming. Obviously, then, you know, in 3 months' time, it could be a situation that you're allowing some fans back into grounds, whether that's, you know, limited capacity or, you know, fingers crossed that the perfect scenario of everyone's allowed back in, then, you know, that will be taken into account as well. So, yeah, we'll continue monitoring that situation. But I think for the time being, yeah, it's good to have football back.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, it's still unsolved in a way, and I appreciate that everything's really complicated. But I guess I'm not going to draw you in on this, there, David. But I'm going to be controversial on this, because obviously this money is on top of the I think 200,000 earlier in the summer from the Premier League, which helped the National League put their playoffs on. That included the Wembley final. And other clubs in other leagues just looked on and tried to juggle bills. So my concern is obviously that we're getting a greater two-tier system. Non-league sort of falling apart because the National League steps one and two are moving ahead. And I can't help but feel that maybe that's a bit short-sighted because many of these clubs are, by design, are going to end up back in step three and below in the next 2 or 3 years' time and suddenly realise again what non-league's about. And we've always spoken about this non-league bond and how everybody works together. I'm just concerned that there's a differentiation coming about. And I know we had this debate in the summer about elite sport and that, but we're mentioning about gates and clubs that are allowed fans in at the moment. They're not making the money. Some of them are losing money because they're opening up the doors and other things that they're having to put on just to get those games on, additional stewards and things like that. Yes, there's been some great funding available from the Premier League via the Football Foundation, but National League clubs have been able to take advantage of that as well. And I'm just concerned that the rest of non-league needs to have a similar voice. And I know you're probably still in conversation with the FA on a regular basis, as are we, but we need some leadership. And I think we spoke about this in the summer or straight after lockdown, that we just needed someone to guide from the top as to the way non-league could go forward. And just what we don't need is this fractional stuff that's going on. And obviously, if there's money being handed out when clubs have signed players that they wouldn't have done, or maybe shouldn't have done, because they didn't know what money was coming in, then you wonder about this financial management oversight and things like that. But anyway, that's my point. I'll let people to take me apart on Twitter because that's what normally happens. But let's get on to the football side of things. two games in, and the National League, there's only four sides with 6 points: Eastleigh, Sutton United, Hartlepool, and Woking. Early front runners, surprise front runners.
Yeah, an interesting start. It always seems the start of the season sort of throws up some interesting results. Like you say, only four teams with a 100% record from their first two games. Obviously, some clubs have only played one, due to Macclesfield's demise. But also, we had our first postponement of the weekend as well at Wealdstone. But yeah, I think we saw Notts County and Stockport County lose on the opening weekend. Both of those teams are very hotly tipped to be up there this season. They did get on the board in midweek with wins, so they are up and running to that extent. But yeah, so it certainly looks like an interesting season ahead. I don't think you'd have perhaps had Eastleigh, the front runners after two games at the top of the league. Equally Woking, who are still part time and have been going really well under Alan Dowson's reign over the last couple of seasons. Also with 6 points there. So certainly an interesting one to follow this year. Like I said, I think we probably all looked at Notts County and Stockport to be up there, but it could be one of those seasons, where we do get a surprise package, upsetting the big boys a little bit. So certainly one to look out for. And of course, you've got the behind closed doors aspect as well, which I don't know whether that leads to more goals being scored and more exciting games or something. I don't know, like we've been seeing in the Premier League. But certainly one to look out for.
And of course, since we last spoke, that the whole world has been like Hollywood, including non-league, with Hollywood sniffing around non-league and Wrexham. Any more word on that?
Yeah, it's a really interesting story. With the takeover there, I think probably some people, and possibly even those at Wrexham, when they saw the interest come in from Ryan Reynolds and co, probably thought someone's having a wind up here. But it certainly seems like they're keen to do something with the club. I saw tweets the other night of Ryan Reynolds on set somewhere, watching the Wrexham game on the live stream. So, Yeah, really, really interesting one, and it would certainly raise the profile of Wrexham and non-league football if they were to come on board, and indeed it already has to some extent with, you know, everything that's sort of gone on at the moment, like I say, with them watching the games from afar and, you know, and they've been tweeting a bit about it as well. So, yeah, possibly I think the... you know, a real sort of surprise takeover there in the offering and you know, arguably the sort of biggest or interesting one non-league will have ever seen.
Yeah, and I think you're right there that it's been great for non-league as a whole as well. I haven't had too many A-lifts, Hollywood celebrities ringing me about my own club, but, you know, the numbers out there on the website. But I think it just also, in the current climate, it brought people's awareness of non-league football and, you know, the plight of clubs. You know, Wrexham have been through the mill, back and all over in recent years. And, you know, their stories got out there and their story is so similar to so many other clubs at non-league level. And hopefully it will prick the consciousness of other celebrities, entrepreneurs that maybe want to get involved in non-league football for all the right reasons.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I always think with Wrexham, you know, a few years I remember hearing sort of that they were the longest serving club in the National League, which is sort of unbelievable to hear. And that was, you know, years ago. So, you know, to still be in there now, it's obviously so frustrating for their fans and for the club. And, you know, this is just, I guess, something maybe they need just to sort of galvanise things again. You know, Dean Keats has gone back there, who had success before. You know, they've started pretty solidly to, you know, and after the first couple of games, whether this takeover is just sort of the bit of drive and the bit of injection of finance that they need, you know, it could well be that, because I think, you know, increasingly in the National League, you do really need to sort of be something special to get promotion out of it, because it is so difficult and that's so competitive with the clubs in there nowadays. You know, and perhaps you sort of, you look at Wrexham and think maybe something like that might be the only way they sort of get out. But no, it's yeah, certainly I think good to see for non-league. And if Ryan Reynolds wants to get you know, Dwayne The Rock Johnson or someone else involved in non-league, you know, I think we'd probably be keen for it.
And I'd surrender my guest column in the non-league paper if they wanted to take it over. That's fine. Obviously, you know, the situation we're in as well, there's some negative, some difficulties that clubs are facing. You know, we talk about clubs that are in financial difficulty, but then you get a club like St Ives Town that are now in lockdown for 2 weeks because of a positive COVID test. It's going to be a bitty season, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I think we were probably perhaps waiting sort of for the first, you know, a sort of case of that. You know, as it's come with St Ives, like you say, going into lockdown, I believe their manager and a couple of players have tested positive, and it could well turn out that there's more there. You know, so they won't be playing for a couple of weeks. Yeah, and it, you know, they certainly won't be the only ones to have an incident like that. And, you know, I think first and foremost, hopefully they're all able to recover and get back to playing safely. But yeah, like you say, it's going to be a season of interruptions like that. And hopefully we just don't get the main sort of interruption of a national lockdown or football being all brought to a halt. So, yeah, it will be one of those seasons, as we've already seen. The games are coming thick and fast, and you know, if you're not playing for a couple of weeks, the likelihood is you've missed four games and potentially more. So, yeah, it's going to be a difficult one for clubs and players to adapt to. But you know, I think sort of the heart of it, I think everyone is happy to be back playing, but there's always going to be that case of, you know, whether or sort of feeling at the back of people's minds that, you know, things could get shut down again at any moment. You know, we've seen local lockdowns, you know, come into force in sort of the northeast and northern areas. Local authorities have the power to, you know, further restrict crowds at clubs, which we've also seen. So, you know, these are the things clubs players and managers are having to deal with this season. I don't think anyone sort of expected anything else, really, to be honest.
Yeah, well, as you say, the games are coming thick and fast. You've got another a paper coming out on Sunday. What can we expect to read in this weekend's paper?
Yeah, so this is actually the first weekend where we've had all of steps 1 to 6 playing football again. You know, obviously step 2 got underway in midweek, but this is the first Saturday where everyone will have played together. So we'll have all of those games covered. Our man Dave Waters has been busy preparing our match reporters and photographers and everyone else to get the reports over on Saturday, which we always appreciate so much, and without them, obviously, the paper wouldn't be anywhere near what it is. So lots to read on a match basis on Sunday morning. But we've also got the thoughts of Mark Harris, Northern Premier League chairman, has written us an exclusive column on some of the challenges clubs are facing and sort of the events of the last couple of weeks or so, which is always a good read of Mark. We're previewing the FA Cup third round qualifying, which gets underway next week in midweek, so lots of interesting ties there. I've spoken to Sheffield United this week, who will be going to Eastbourne Borough of the National League South. I mean, Sheffield have had plenty of history, but they've had difficulties as well in probably the last two decades. You know, they've had loads of ground shares. They've had to stop playing first team football at times, but now it's certainly a club on the up. They've got their ground up to step 4 level, and that's where they're pushing for now. And I think the FA Cup's very much a bonus for them. They had a great win at Welling last weekend, which certainly got them some attention, and now hopefully they'll be looking to repeat that next weekend. And there's loads more else in the paper as well. Bobby Madley, former Premier League referee, he's sort of keen to work his way back up the refereeing pyramid. He talks about how he follows Ofsted and sort of his love for non-league football and how he's become involved in that as well. So plenty in there for everyone this weekend. And as always, we really appreciate the support for the paper, whether it be picking it up from the petrol station floor or getting it digitally. We appreciate it all the same.
And we appreciate you, David. I appreciate all the work that goes into the non-league paper. And Dave Waters gets another mention on the non-league football show. He's written into legend on this show and at the paper as well. David, thanks for joining us and best of luck at the weekend.
Cheers, Tim. Thanks very much.
So while we're back on it, let's head on over to another old friend of the show, another man who's been very busy while this show has been taking a breather. In fact, I think he's probably provided more stats this season than most will for the whole of the rest of the season put together. He's already had 4 rounds in the FA Cup to contend with, and as we see the third qualifying round on the horizon, it's time to catch up with at FA Cup Fact Farm, Mr. Phil Announce. Welcome back, Phil.
Hi, Tim. Hi. Good to talk to you again.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Phil. Now, this must be one of the easier rounds for you, isn't it? With just a handful of clubs in this round.
Well, it is easier in a sense, yes. With only 40 ties, does make life a bit easier than the previous rounds. But still, nonetheless, a challenging task to get on top of it all.
I don't doubt that. We're always astounded by the facts you provide, and obviously I mentioned we've already had plenty of rounds so far. How's the more condensed FA Cup been this season?
it's been like working on speed. It's been very hectic. Once you get the rounds out of the way, you get the draw immediately, and then within 10 days the next round comes along, and then you have to do the analysis for that, and then once you've got that done, another 10 days and it's all happening again. So it's just non-stop, which is wonderful in one respect because I love the FA Cup and I could spend every day just working on it. But on the other hand, it would be nice just to get a little bit of a break from it for time.
Yeah, but it's the FA Cup. It's the FA Cup. It's the reason that football's still buzzing. You know, they can tell us about their Premier League and all the goals that they're scoring there. But actually, it's the FA Cup that's keeping fans going and keeping us all buzzing and loving the game. But obviously, we just got the last round out of the way. Well, Saturday was when the games were supposed to be played, but obviously the weather played its part. Then I know there's the FA insisting that all the games were played either Saturday, Sunday or Monday because they had the draw coming out. So is it lots of games been crammed in again this week and some Step 5 clubs grabbing the headlines with some shocks?
Yeah, they are. We've had a couple of big Step 5 club victories over Step 2. I think Sheppey United and Christchurch were the two clubs that had the biggest wins against National League opposition. Christchurch get another go against, I think it's at Dulwich Hamlet in the third qualifying round. And I've just learned that's the tie that the BBC have selected to show live. So they know where there's a potential cup set when they see one. But yeah, so Step 5 club still going well. And we actually have an all Step 5 tie in the third qualifying round, which is fantastic news because it means we're guaranteed at least one club from that level between Longreach Town and Skelmersdale United from the North West Counties League in the fourth qualifying round.
Well, that's always good to make sure that the smaller clubs are benefiting as well. Obviously, we've got lower prize money this year because there's just less money around, I guess, isn't there? But it's still a healthy windfall for the clubs winning in this third qualifying round, over £5,000. And yeah, for a Step 5 club in the current climate, that would be a fantastic windfall and an opportunity as well to play a high-level club.
Well, yeah, I mean, the money is good, and yeah, it's a shame it's not as good as it was, but it does make a difference for clubs if they go on a good run, you know, and to have four rounds already of winnings plus a guaranteed losers pot this time round, and you know, as I said, one of the Step 5 clubs definitely into the fourth qualifying round, and you've also had a couple of clubs from the Isthmian League or Step 4 anyway, who also started in it to Premier round. You've got Whiteleaf and Marsh United, so both of those have earned a pot of money to get this far as well, and it's beneficial to them as well.
And I was having a conversation with someone the other day. It'd be interesting to see whether those clubs benefit in the league as well, because obviously they had to get their competitive boots on a bit quicker than everybody else, really, to join in the competition earlier than normal. We like debutants in the competition as well normally, but we're well into the competition already, and there's none of them left in the competition now.
No, unfortunately not, but it isn't unusual that they've all gone by now. But you know, they have made a big impact this year. Newark in particular, first three games they scored I think 13 goals without reply. So they had a fantastic new season. And another team, I think New Salamis, they also had a wonderful debut in the FA Cup this year. So they might not have got as far as the third qualifying round, but they've definitely made an impact on the competition.
And obviously, it's the third qualifying round beginning next Tuesday. I understand the need to get games in during the reduced calendar, but Tuesday night FA Cup football, when it's not a replay or a postponement, it's an odd thing to get your head around.
It is. I'm just about getting used to it. I've been to a couple of the nighttime games, and you know, it is a little bit different. But once you just accept it that it's happening, then it's fine. You know, in the past, if you'd gone to one in the evening, you know it was a replay and it was a danger it could go into extra time and penalties and you could be there till 11 o'clock. So at least in this instance, you know, it's all over by 10, regardless of what happens.
It's almost like a government statement, that one. It's all over by 10 regardless. That's the world we live in nowadays. You mentioned a few of the ties in this third round qualifying next week. Any particular that take your fancy, though?
I'm taking in Bristol Manor Farm against Cray Wanderers. It's one of three ties where the winner will be celebrating the fact that they've either reached their best ever round or have equaled their best ever for the cup run. So that should be good to watch, and knowing it's going to be a play to an end on the evening, means you know that for sure that they've made history. You've also got Hartley Wintney versus Barking, which is a similar tie. And then you've got Sterling versus Wharton Casuals, where neither of those teams have appeared in the fourth qualifying round before. So there's something to play for on top of just winning the game down in the South Coast there.
Yeah. The one that Sholin and Christchurch being close to me are certainly ones that I pulled out. I also, as a tie, because they're two clubs that I've seen quite a bit in recent seasons, Taunton Town against Truro City looks to be a West Country a battle and a half, that one.
Yeah, and Taunton won in a big match at Tiverton in the previous round, so their second big derby of sorts. I think they met one time before. Truro did win the last time they met. But it should be a great game. I've been down at Taunton once in the past and really enjoyed my visit there. So good luck to them in that game. But it'll be tough to get one over on Truro.
Yeah, and we as a journalist, I always love a little bit of alliteration. So Southport versus South Shields is one that doesn't really trip off the tongue.
Well, they met us in the FA Trophy and had two great matches. Southport winning through in the end. So South Shields will be looking to try and avenge that defeat. But Southport is one of my old hometown teams, so a little bit impartial there and hoping that Southport do come through.
Yeah, and obviously we had the directive from the FA last week about visiting fans from Step 2 clubs being, effectively banned. And obviously we're now just a couple of steps around from the excitement of the first round proper. I've heard it discussed on the terraces if those games, when a non-league club pulls a home tie against Football League opposition, if the fans aren't allowed there, it could kill the magic of the FA Cup, because the away fans are worse if the game had to be played behind closed doors or even a tie switched. It's just, that is the magic of the FA Cup, isn't it? I know when you go around to clubs up and down the country, that's the bit that you enjoy.
Well, I think it's a real shame that we can't get both sets of fans at what would be a big game for the home side if they were to draw a league club at home, in regardless of whether it gets on TV or not. It makes a big difference. You've seen the games when they've been a broadcast on TV, and it makes for a great atmosphere, and also it can add a little bit to the home side to really G them up to give the higher level opposition a good go, which, you know, is a bit more difficult to do when you haven't really got a big atmosphere or a big crowd cheering you on.
Yeah, and I know the FA have told us that they're looking at it. They tell us lots of things, and I'm trying to get them to go on record, but I've still got channels of communication open, so we're still talking to them. I don't want to upset them, because I know they're doing a hard and thankless task of a job there. But it would be nice to at least in some capacity for away fans. I'm also concerned for fans that, you know, followed their club for years and haven't got the opportunity to go and watch them yet, which it does seem a shame and could be detrimental to football in the long term.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a wider issue than just the FA Cup, but yes, football needs fans and fans need football. So, you know, the sooner we can get to a situation where everyone can get to games safely, then the better. And it is going to be a real shame for clubs, particularly if they want to stay record runs in the FA Cup and get into a round they've never been to before. You want as many people as possible to experience that. So let's hope that we get something that we can work with that allows fans into games, even though we're looking like we're heading into a difficult winter period.
Indeed. And I know you're working hard on your fact file for this third round qualifying. We're a few days ahead than normal on this one, but I normally sell it as it's important for people to read so that they can baffle their friends or impress their friends at the pub, which might not be the thing that they'll be doing now, but at least if you're having to follow on Twitter or Facebook or watch a stream watch a live game somehow of the FA Cup when it comes about next week, where can they find out more about all your facts and follow you?
Well, of course, you can follow me on Twitter. We've got at FA Cup Fact File. But also, I run a blog on WordPress, facacupfactfile.com. A couple of interesting stats you'll find out in there. This third qualifying round, we have the first ever tree derby. We've got Braintree Town hosting Morden and Tiptree, and we've never had a match pairing up two trees in that respect before. And all in Tree Health Week as well, so that was quite quite bizarre. But we also have the Cray Valley Paper Mills taking on Avely, which is the Battle of the Millers. So we'll have to see who can grind out a result between
Ooh.
Those two.
Oh,
so yeah, I know. Sorry, the puns aren't good. I think the biggest thing though for this round is that with the sad demise of Macclesfield, there's a possibility of a bye in the fourth qualifying round. So a victory in this round could actually be a step directly into the first round proper. So that should motivate all teams on Tuesday and Wednesday of next week.
Indeed, and if they needed any more motivation, just read Phil's blog and all the stats there. Phil, thanks for joining us back on the Non-League Football Show, and we'll speak to you again soon.
Brilliant. Thanks, Tim.
Now, it's not all doom and gloom, this new normal. It's hard. It needs some additional effort in places, but with any change to normality comes opportunity, and our next guest knows all about that. After ending last season disappointed that they couldn't push on from their playoff position in the Northern Premier League when COVID stopped play, he's made sure his team is ready to make that challenge again. Four games played so far with four wins. Let's hear from the manager at Warrington Town, Paul Carden. Welcome back to the Non-League Football Show, Paul.
Good afternoon, Tim. Hope you're well.
I'm well. I guess you are as well. I mean, four from four sounds great at any point in the season, but at the start, that's what dreams are made of. And in those four games, eight goals scored and all clean sheets. Have you had to pinch yourself?
Well, you know, it is a good start, but that's all it is. But, you know, I know what we're capable of, so I'm not, without sounding arrogant or full of it, I'm not surprised. But, you know, as I say, it is only a start and, you know, we need to maintain it.
Yeah, we've spoken earlier on the show about the difficulties that the clubs are facing and that includes managers as well, because as a modern-day manager, Dave Anson often talks about this, you're also a bit of a social worker as well to your players. I mean, how have you been able to sort of rally the troops to hit the ground running from day one?
Well, to be honest, we've got a good group when it comes to that, and I've got good seniors, good experienced players who, you know, who help with that. You know, I think the chairman's good. You know, we're very hands-on. I'm constantly speaking to the players and addressing them as in a group, as well as, you know, speaking to them all the time individually. And I think it's just a case of doing your job. You know, because at the end of the day, you know, you have got a group of players, but first and foremost the people. So you're dealing with people, and it's just a case of treating each individual to what they need, and to some of them just need leaving alone and letting do what they need to do, and others need a little bit more time, a little bit more care. You know, so it's just knowing the characters that are in the group and the personalities. So yeah, we just do what we've always done, and that's try and be as helpful to the people we've got, and hope that makes the player better.
Yeah, I mean that's the art of management, really, isn't it? The understanding the people that you've got, but also making sure that you've brought those the right people in around you. I mean, during lockdown, we had managers that were running online sessions. They were you know, various WhatsApp groups and that sort of thing. How did you guys deal with it? Was there a lot of self management faith put into the players to keep their fitness levels high?
Well, each week we'd put a couple of sessions on. We put a program on at the beginning of it, as to, you know, just different fitness, sessions. But each week we'd refresh it, and we put new drills in, little individual challenges for the group, that the lads were recording their results, and they were all putting it on. So we had little challenges. Obviously, they were doing it individually, but we still tried to keep it as a collective, where they'd have to post their times if we set some running challenges, or their distances if we set some running challenges within time. So, you know, every weekend we'd do a quiz, a Zoom quiz every Saturday night, just to keep the lads, you know, together. And we done our player of the year on a Zoom chat as well, which was a laugh. So we did what we could within, you know, certainly the technology that could be used. You know, I feel we maximised what we could do.
And I guess as a manager, the Zoom wasn't one of your first go-to tools normally. Do you think it's going to change the way that people manage? You know, is it a move towards technology anyway with data analysts? But is it changing the way that even we work at non-league level?
I think it's helped. I think if you start relying on it, you're going to have problems because, you know, I won't sign a player without meeting them face to face. You know, I'd want the player to get a feel for me, and I want to get a feel for that player. You know, look them in the eye. You know, gauge the body language, the temperament when they're dealing with you. You know, that type of thing. So, you know, I think if you're going to use it and rely on it as your go-to tool, then I don't think it's going to work. But it certainly has helped through this pandemic and certainly during lockdown. But for me, you know, I'll be disappointed if I have to use it more than I have already.
Yeah, well, that's those people skills coming through again. I mean, we saw when the Premier League came back and we watched the National League had their playoffs over the summer, that match fitness is a real thing as well. I mean, how have you got your lads up to speed so perfectly to start this season with four wins from four?
Well, what we did, obviously there was a time when we didn't know when when the season was going to start, so we couldn't work back from a start date. So we had an idea of, you know, there was a few dates sort of whispered, which we kind of gauged. So we had the lads in for a month before we actually started pre-season. We'd done six sessions. We'd done three Saturday sessions. Four Saturday sessions and two Thursday sessions. Just basically strength and conditioning work, strength and resistance work, just so we knew that once we got the go-ahead for pre-season, once we got a confirmed date that we could work back 6 or 7 weeks from, that the lad, we weren't treading on eggshells with how hard we could push them. So we got a base in first, and then we were able to pursue our pre-season as we normally would, knowing that the lads were at a level that they could crack on. And to be fair, there was a lot of these Twitter challenges going about where, you know, the 5K challenge and stuff like that, the 3K challenges that our lads all wanted to take part in and all done. And like I say, we had our own challenges through lockdown that we'd set them. And, you know, and I think the modern day players are a lot fitter than they were. And the ones that didn't do anything during lockdown are the ones that you see struggling, because ultimately the lockdown for everybody has been like a long-term injury, and if you don't do anything when you're out injured long-term, you struggle to get back. So I don't believe there's been an excuse for lads to not be fit. I think it's the one thing that every player should pride themselves on, and the one thing that, you know, I have a saying to the lads when I sign them new, but at the beginning of the season, I say there's three things that I demand, I expect. That's professionalism, fitness, and enjoy it. And if you're professional and you do things right, then there's no sort of excuses. If you're fit as you can be, then no one's going to question you, whether you on your efforts. And if you do the first two things, if you're professional and fit, then the ability that you've got will make you enjoy it, because you'll win more than you lose. Yeah. And winning obviously brings the most enjoyment in football. So so that's a kind of standard we have. And to be fair, the lads have adhered to it. So, you know, I can't praise them enough for that at the minute.
And that says so much about you as well, Paul, because obviously you had a great career as a player and as a manager. And whenever I've come across you, you always, like now, you're top of the league, four wins in, and you're still calm. You sound like you're just enjoying football. You just enjoy football. You're not one of these managers that stands aside from his players. He stands alongside them. You've always been prepared to get your hands dirty, do whatever role needs to be done. And I think that that's probably one of the reasons why you've had such a great start to this, you know, new normal season, is that everybody is part of your team.
Well, that's, you know, when we've achieved things, you know, when I achieve things as a player with good teams, and, you know, that was always the reason behind it. You know, there was never any, obviously there was individuals who stood out in the team, but the individual was part of the team. There was no player who was more important than the next, because it's like anything, you know, you need every type of component to make something work. Whether it's, I don't know, whether it's a kit man, or whether it's, you know, a sports scientist, or a strength and conditioning coach, or a centre forward who's going to get you 25 goals, or a keeper who's going to keep 15, 20 clean sheets. Everyone's as important as the next, you know, and that's what makes the team happen. You know, and I'll never be any different, because, you know, it's just evident. And I say it all the time to lads, all the cliches, they'll never go away, because the cliches, because they work. You know, there's no I in team and all these things that, and they're proven, and he will stand the test, and he's stood the test of time, and he will stand the test of time, because, you know, you only have to look at Liverpool, who I support. You know, nobody outruns them. There's no, oh, okay, they've got your Salahs and your Manes and your Van Dijks and you know, the keeper. You know, they are the stars, but within a team, and it's the team effort that comes before anything, and that's why they're the best team knocking about, albeit for the last result. But, but you know, that's the way I am, and that's the way I'll always be. And, you know, I believe I'll be more successful being that way than if I start beating my own chest and patting myself on the back and singing my own praises, because that's certainly not what I'm about as a person.
Yeah, well, it's good. It's good to hear it as well from the horse's mouth. I opened the show talking about how important the volunteer workforce are, and you've already touched upon there. You know, the people like the kit man that don't normally get recognised. That at the moment you're at step three, my club's at step three. We're enjoying football and allowing fans in, and we know that. Yeah, that might not be possible forever at the moment in the current normal, but it's important that everybody embraces everything that people are trying to do, just to make sure that the football can get on.
Yeah, it is. It's vital, and you know, there's a lot of times at this level, we get overlooked as a level. You know, so I think it's only right that each team and each division pulls together, because. You know, we won't get anywhere sort of fighting our own fight, you know, but we need to be fighting it as one, and we need to do all we can to maintain, you know, the opportunity for fans to come into the ground. And, you know, if that's putting arrows on the floor to make sure people go one way, to have hand sanitizers all around the pitch, to make sure that the stewards are in the right places and people are directed to the right areas. It's got to be done, because the last thing we need, you know, all clubs at this level financially is to be playing behind closed doors. You know, it's tough enough as it is to make ends meet. You know, and clubs at these levels are very hand to mouth, and without that income, you know, I think you're going to find a lot more clubs struggling than they already are. So, you know, we all have to play our part and do what we can to ensure that we keep the, even if it is reduced numbers, we keep them coming in, because they're vital to clubs' existence. So that's how it has to be.
Yeah, I mean, it does make a difference, doesn't it, to the players and the management that someone's there, even if they're shouting abuse at you. It still creates an atmosphere. And as you mentioned, even for clubs that are allowed the fans in, it's hard at the moment, because there aren't the other revenue streams that they rely on. How as a manager, how do you shield your players from that side of things? Do you try and shield yourself from it as well? You mentioned the chairman there, and we've spoken to Toby quite a few times on the show, and we know his ambition and what he wants to do, but do you try and just focus on your management duties?
I do, but, you know, I do have to, you know, have an eye on how the club is, and I'm constantly on to Toby. Are we okay? Are we okay financially? You know, if we're spending too much, then I have to make cuts, which, you know, I'm more than prepared to do. You know, there wasn't a player we retained from last season who didn't take a reduction, you know, which is evidence of the type of people we recruit. You know, and if anybody wouldn't have, then he'd have gone. It's as simple as that, because we weren't in a position to start being negotiable in terms of what we could offer. And so I always have an eye on that, because at the end of the day, Toby's got a wife and Lisa, and obviously has two kids, and he's a family man, and he's got to earn, and he's obviously got to make sure that the club is right. And so I don't want to put any extra pressure on him and his family for me to sign a player who might be a little bit out of our reach, but I'm pushing him to it. I won't do it. If he tells me that it's not there, it's not there. You know, it's just the way it is, and we'll work with what we've got, because I believe as a club we'll always be competitive in the market we can be in. And, you know, I think the way we do things, I think it's, you know, it's where clubs, players, and we've had one sign who turned us down last season for an extra, you know, worth out £150 more, which is pretty significant at our level. But I knew he wouldn't enjoy it, and I knew he'd end up with his tail between his legs coming back or coming to us. And he has done, and he's ended up coming for less than what we offered him last season because the money isn't there. You know, because we try and do things right, and the lads appreciate that, and everybody who's been at the club, who's worked for Toby, will all say the same. You know, I'm no different to the managers before me in terms of singing his praises and about how he runs the club and how he will always try his best for people. And that's all you can ask for the chairman and owner. And I think he sees the way the lads are, to, you know, that they try the best to give it back.
Yeah, the world's a different place from where it was this time last year, of course. But you're very experienced and a much coveted manager. You must have seen, we talk about managers signing or looking for a new club and looking for a project to get into. You must share a similar vision with Toby, who's achieved so much there. How far do you think the club can go?
Well, I mean, Toby knows my ambitions to get back to being full time. You know, don't forget, I left Tranmere. Mm. You know, I was assistant manager at Tranmere, even though the manager who took me there, Gary Brabham, had left, and Mickey had came in. I didn't have to leave, but I always thought, well, you know, Mickey wanted to bring his own staff in. I was part of the old regime, and it was the right thing to do, was to leave Tranmere to let Mickey and Jacko have a go at it. You know, we'd had our turn. It didn't work out as planned. So, you know, let someone else have a go. I wasn't going to hang around and just, you know, on the coattails of somebody else. I wanted to pursue my own career and challenges. And when the Warrington offer came about, that was, I didn't want to go into management at a club that didn't share my ambitions. I'd been at Southport, which, you know, started okay. We stayed up. We needed snookers when I took over to stay up, and we stayed up, which was an achievement. But really hard going into games, knowing you're second favourites in every game. Mm. And the betting shops and the bookmakers are never far wrong, which they weren't. So, you know, I always vowed if I was to go back into management, it was always going to be somewhere that gave us a chance. And that's certainly been the case with Warrington and Toby. And, you know, the ambition with the club is always to push on and to get up the leagues. And I believe we're strong enough too. You know, we've hit the bar on a couple of occasions, and you know, I think we're going the right direction. I'm not saying we're the finished article, but you know, we've got good players in a good setup, and you know, we just keep our feet on the ground and keep pushing on to try and get up.
Yeah, and it's great to have those ambitions and those plans. But obviously, we hear much about the COVID risk in the Northwest. And I think Warrington already in an area subject to local lockdown, advisories from the government that fans are to be discouraged from attending games. It's quite probably a risk that there may be greater restrictions that affect you at some point this season. And already there's some teams that are falling behind on their games. Have you got a plan in place in case these scenarios come about, or will we just deal with them as and when they arise?
I think we just have to deal with them, because let's be honest, the guidelines are as clear as mud. The rules are as clear as mud. And the government is as vague as ever as to what's right and wrong. So I think if you start trying to plan, you end up wasting your time and energy, because what can you plan for? You know, plan for the season to stop. So you're planning on a pause in the season, which, you know, I don't believe you should be looking at. We just, again, the cliches come out. We're just focusing on each week and each game. And that's until we're told we can't play, or we can only play games away or whatever, then we'll just keep doing what we're doing until such time, because I don't want to be distracted on things that might be. I just want to know what, you know, what is definite. And all we can do is control the controllables from our own point of view. And that's what we'll try our best to continue to do.
And so next up, an away trip to Mickleover Sports. Have you had a chance to even look at them this season?
No, I haven't seen them. I know, obviously, know the manager. I know John McGrath really well from our playing days and playing against one another. And, you know, we're similar ages and we've had shared similar experience as players. And but I speak to him quite a bit. So I know how his side will be, very similar to ourselves, to be hard working. He'll have good players and, you know, he'll want them playing the way he did. And, you know, so I know it'll be a good game. There's no givens in this league. And people say, oh, were you shocked at Ratcliffe beating South Shields? No, I wasn't, because, you know, you can guess as much as you want, but never be surprised by any club in our division beating anyone else in the division, because it is strong. We played Atherton Colliers midweek last week, and we beat them 2-0, and it was a really tough, good, competitive game that I was really pleased with how we played, because I think people will take 3 points for granted about playing Atherton Colliers. And I spoke to their manager and I said to Brad, I said, you know, you're going to take points off teams, you're well drilled, you're organised, you're fit, everything you need to be, and, you know, teams will take them lightly at the pedal, which I'm glad we've witnessed firsthand that they're a good, tough team. And, you know, they went to Granton before they played us, and they beat Granton, who were highly fancied and made some big signings this summer. So, you know, I'm never surprised by the results of the league, and, you know, we'll have a tough one on Saturday, which, you know, we need to be at our best to make sure we come back with the 3 points.
Well, Paul, I better let you get off and prepare for that one. It's been fantastic having you on. I think if you threw your hat in now to become the next Prime Minister, there'd probably be a few people jumping up ready to vote for you, because I think you've got the ethic of that everybody should be adopting in should have adopted anyway before the situation we're in. But it served you well, and I hope it serves you well for a much longer time as well. Best of luck on Saturday and for the rest of the season. Thanks for joining us on the Non-Leaf Show.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
So that's it for this week. Thank you all for joining me, for all your support over the years and all over the summer as well. It's been great to have some of those messages, finding out where we've been and when we're coming. Well, we are back. That's it. It's been nice to have a break, but even nicer to be back. It's been tough. We'd hope to come back with a slightly adjusted format, a new sponsor to help the pay the bills, but the current climate has put a halt to that for now, at least. It's been a stressful time, and I hope my opening sermon is taken in the right context. We all need to work together, and we all need to realise the toll these extra burdens are putting on the lifeblood of our beautiful game, the people that run our clubs, the volunteers up and down the country. One of which I must also send my best wishes to my own colleague and friend, General Manager and Groundsman at Hayes and Yedding United, Derek Matthews. He's very poorly in hospital at the moment, but we hope to see him again very soon. Get well soon, Derek, from all of us at the club, in football and the Non-League Football Show. Thanks to all of our guests, and as ever, please share the show and tell people about us. We are back, and after 15 seasons of doing this, how could we ever go away? Don't forget, you can follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show. It's Dave Anderson's there at Dave Anderson 78 and myself at Tim Fuel. Plus, of course, you can find us every week on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, on Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, via your smart speakers and all good podcast aggregation sites. So take a look there too for the Non-League Gaffer Tapes, which will be back very soon with a new series. Stay alert, stay safe. Thank you and goodbye.
production. J-I-B-B-A, J-A-B-B-A.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.